Genesis chapter 38. It came to pass at the time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite, whose name was Hirah. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite, whose name was Shua. And he married her and went in to her. So she conceived and bore a son, and he called his name Ur. She conceived again and bore a son, and she called his name Onan. And she conceived yet again, and bore a son, and called his name Shelah. He was at Chezeb when she bore him. Then Judah took a wife for Ur, his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. But Ur, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord killed him. And Judah said to Onan, "Go into your brother's wife and marry her, and raise up an heir to your brother." But Onan knew that the heir would not be his. And it came to pass, when he went into his brother's wife, that he emitted on the ground, lest he should give an heir to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, therefore he killed him also. Then Judah said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, "Remain a widow in your father's house till my son Shelah is grown." For he said, "Lest he also die like his brothers." And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. Now, in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. And Judah was comforted and went up to his sheep shearers at Timnah, he and his friend Hirah the Adullamite. And it was told Tamar, saying, "Look, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep." So she took off her widow's garments, covered herself with a veil, and wrapped herself, and sat in an open place, which was on the way to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given to him as a wife. When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot, because she had covered her face. Then he turned to her by the way and said, "Please let me come in to you." For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. So she said, "What will you give me that you may come in to me?" And he said, "I will send you a young goat from the flock." So she said, "Will you give me a pledge till you send it?" Then he said, "What pledge shall I give you?" So she said, "Your signet and cord, and your staff that is in your hand." Then he gave them to her, and went into her, and she conceived by him. So she arose and went away, and laid aside her veil, and put on the garments of her widowhood. And Judah sent the young goat by the hand of his friend the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he did not find her. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, "Where is the harlot who was openly by the roadside?" And they said, "There was no harlot in this place." So he returned to Judah and said, "I cannot find her." Also the men of the place said, "There was no harlot in this place." Then Judah said, "Let her take then for herself, lest we be shamed, for I sent this young goat, and you have not found her." And it came to pass, about 3 months after, that Judah was told, saying, "Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has played the harlot. Furthermore, she is with child by harlotry." So Judah said, "Bring her out and let her be burned." When she was brought out, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, "By the man to whom these belong, I am with child." And she said, "Please determine whose these are, the signet and cord and staff." So Judah acknowledged them and said, "She has been more righteous than I, because I did not give her to Shelah my son." And he never knew her again. Now it came to pass at the time of giving birth that, behold, twins were in her womb. And so it was when she was giving birth that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took a scarlet thread and bound it on his hand, saying, "This one came out first." Then it happened, as he drew back his hand, that his brother came out unexpectedly. And she said, "How do you break through this breach upon you?" Therefore his name was called Perez. Afterward his brother came out, who had the scarlet thread on his hand, and his name was called Zerah.
Any thoughts, any questions, any...
I have a few questions. I don't quite understand what's being said in verse 12. It says, "Now in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died." I don't know if there's any way of track timeline and such in this. Does this fit? But is this the time that Joseph is in Egypt serving, Potiphar? And also, are the twins that Tamar bore a type of replacement as Seth for the two sons that God took from him at the beginning of this chapter?
The last question was what now?
Are the twins that were born to him a type of replacement for the two sons he lost previously?
Right, and the last one was born someplace else. We will get to that. Most people don't notice that. Very fascinating. Any other questions?
It's normally taught that Tamar's intent was to ensnare Judah, at least as far as what I've heard. But reading through this, it doesn't really seem that that's necessarily exactly what she was doing. I'm just wondering, is the Hebrew pretty clear on whether or not she was intending to bring him in at that point?
All right.
The question is about the verse where it says, Judah acknowledged and said, "She is more righteous than I." I'd like a little perspective on that.
We'll get there. These are interesting questions. This chapter is not very difficult to go through. Any more questions? All right, now, we have, the previous chapter was about Joseph, right? And now we come in here, there's what's called an unusual chapter. It's got written a different grammar than the chapter 37 is, and different grammar from chapter 39 onward to a certain location. And I'm not going to clarify that at this particular point in time, but we'll get to there in the future. To explain to you what your question, yes, this occurred after. It says, "Came to pass that Jehuda departed." We'll talk about that word later. And it was after the incident that they sold Joseph. Okay? So here now we have an insert of what else took place during, not the life of Joseph, but the life of Judah. And I remember Judah was maybe 3 years younger, maybe 4 years younger than Reuben. And last week I said Reuben was probably between the age of 37 and 40, about that time when Joseph was sold. And so Judah here, was not much younger. I mean, he was about 3 or 4 years younger. So he might have been, maybe 35, 36, maybe even 33, as young as 33, at the point of when Joseph was sold. Now the reason why this particular chapter now inserts now into about Judah, it will be more clarified as the continuation of Genesis continues to its completion. But the very interesting thing, to answer your question, that yes, this is a period of time of his life prior to them going down to Egypt later. So this is not, it's what we call a, quote, an insert chapter, but remember the book of Genesis and all Numbers and Deuteronomy, all of them, do not go in chronological order. They go in thought pattern, thought pattern, thought pattern. So we have to stop and think. Now, this is a thought pattern. When did they decide that this was important to put it at this particular point in time? Because something happened between the time Joseph was sold and time Joseph became the second Pharaoh of Egypt. So the period of time here that's gone by. Now, Joseph was in there for many, many years. He became in charge, served Pharaoh, and became a Pharaoh himself for several years, not just one or two or three, I think it was something like 50 years total, because he died at 110, I guess it was, something like that. No, he was 110 when Joseph died, I think. But anyway, we'll get there. So we have this insert chapter about Judah, because it does affect and will affect later on what takes place. To get to that point. Now, first thing I'm going to go into is interesting chapters. Anybody has any questions about verse 1? It says, Judah departed. Now, his particular verse says departed. And most of you probably don't use that word departed, because it's only in the New King James Version do they use that word. But it means basically what? He went away, he descended downward, he separated himself for a while, not for his life, for a while. Why did he do this for? He wanted a wife. And so what did he get? He got a Canaanite wife, right? He went and found a Canaanite wife, and they had she had three children of him. The first one was called, what was her name? Shua. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? What was the name of Yeshua mean? Yes.
It's actually Bat-Shua, because she's the daughter of Shua. So her name would have been Bat-Shua. Or that would have maybe been her title.
Right.
More like than a name.
A certain Canaanite. Oh, the word certain. Yes, it is. The word certain does not mention in the Hebrew. It means a man of Canaanite whose name was Shua. But what is Shua? You got corrected on that one. What does Shua mean? Part of salvation, because we connected with what? Yahshua. Okay. So now it's an interesting word. It shows up very fascinated. And by the way, the word basically means one who cries out. They're not bawling. You know, they're crying, raising their voice. I mean, they cry out. Very fascinating that this particular person would name that. And very fascinating that word means to cry out. It also is a free person, by the way. The one who cries out is a free person, not a bonded person. And therefore, we look at this point, and it's kind of fascinating. So keep that part in mind as we go through one that cries out. Generally, it can mean cry out for help as well, but not very often. It means to cry out or shout. You know, you're yelling out there for a reason. And what did John Baptist do? He cried out, he shua out in Hebrew, and he did his job. And the first son was named Er. Actually, that's his real name in Hebrew, is Er, and basically it means watchful. He wasn't very watchful, though, was he? And once again, it says he did that was bad. And your translation says the word evil in Hebrew, that means bad. And same thing with Onan. He did that was bad, or it says displeasing in some of your scriptures. Remember I explained last week between the word bad and the word wickedness, right? Two different words in Hebrew, and this word here is bad, mischievous, did something they should not do, or whatever it was. We don't know to explain what it is. We know what Onan did, but we don't have a complete picture of everything else. This doesn't matter, because we're going on to the third child. The third child's name was what? Shelah. Shelah means request. The one that's been requested. Interesting name. But now, getting back to here, now it's verse 5. It's very interesting terminology here. And she conceived again and bore a son and called his name Shelah. He, meaning Judah, was at where? Where was the name of it? Chesed. Interesting word. You know what that word means? Fascinating word. It means falsify. Now, the root word means to lie or to deceive. To lie, to bear false witnesses, and to lie and not tell the truth. Now, why it was there, why that word was used, it is a word that is still found, basically it was quote, a territorial area, not a city. But it was interesting that in this particular place, what was Judah guilty of? He was guilty of deception. And that's where it comes from. You know, so the action here, the verb means there is deception taking place here. He left his family, his brothers, the rest of his brothers, and went to get a wife. It was a Canaanite wife. And then the maneuvering here happening, the three, and then the last son, he decided to say, yes, you'll have it, but have come of age. And guess what he did? He lied. Right? He down and outright lied. Deceived. Deception. Now, of course, Tamar. What's Tamar mean? All it means is a... what? It means a plum. Plum tree. That's all that really means. That's all her name means. So Tamar means a plum tree. It means it's fruitful. And, but, you know, the three of them went down, and now she's on the last one, waiting for it. And in verse 11, Judah said to Tamar, Tamar, your son-in-law, your daughter-in-law, remains a widow. You know what a widow means in Hebrew? Fascinating. One that's a desolate house. Right? She had no children. Or her house now is now desolate. Either she has children, her husband is now dead. Now she is desolate. Interesting knowing how that Hebrew word comes about. And it's fascinating. It's almanah. Almanah is the Hebrew word for widow, which comes from one who is now desolate because she has no husband to take care of her, and now she's alone. But she had to go where? She had to go back to her father's place. Now, in our society, we'd never think of that. Nah, don't come back home. Bounce to welfare. See if you can get some money from somebody else, but I'll go out for work, woman. That's what we have in our thinking. That's our society as today. And there's not too much in this chapter, so we won't be too long on it. But it's very fascinating. Verse 12, I want you to read this again. Now, in process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. Now, the last statement's kind of funny. What's the last sentence say to you in that very same verse? Different translations, please. And Judah was what? Comforted. He was comforted. She's dead. Sorry, what? Recovered? Recovered from his grief. Okay. So it's a little bit better of saying that he has now gone past this point. And the word comfort is not a really good word in your translation. He really did alter. I mean, now the time has passed. Whether it was, who knows, several days or several months, we don't know, it doesn't tell us. But he went into the sheep shearer, who was at Dinan, and his friend, Chira, the Adulite. By the way, do you know what Adulite means? Very fascinating word. It comes from the word of Adulam. Adulam. All it means is justice of the people. Justice of the people. That's what his name means. Not him, but that line that Hilah was from is the justice of the people. It means somebody who has dignity, his position, he has been recognized as someone who is very, very important in that area, and kind of help you to understand a little bit about what was going on here, because this person was a friend and their dear friend of Judah. And so now he is going to do something. And so he was went down to him, and he and his friend went down there, and then Tamar said, looking at her father-in-law, was told his father was to go to Timnah to shear his sheep. And she took off her garments and decided to dress up differently, wrap herself up as one who would be playing the harlot. And for she saw that, who was of age now? Yeah, who was of age, which is the one that was requested. All right? And so she saw she played the part of a harlot. We went through that word already. Do not get confused, by the way. Harlotry does not mean committing adultery. Different words. Committing an adultery is one thing. Being a harlotry is something entirely different. All right, we even have that in our English. Yes.
Isn't the word for harlot, the Hebrew, if you go back to the Hebrew, isn't it the same word that is used to describe Rahab? So this is would be, she was basically playing the part of not what we would think of as a prostitute literally, but like an innkeeper, someone who provides hospitality in more ways than one.
We're not in there, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But harlotry, the oven by itself in Hebrew, this word means one who does sexual things.
But the word in Hebrew is the same one as Rahab.
I know, same as Rahab. Now, what people don't like accept something about Rahab. They don't like accept something about Rahab. But she really was a business lady, and that's what they did. I mean, that's something that they did. We don't like it. We don't think it's good. But nonetheless, it happened. But I want to get back to this one now. And so, and of course, she made this deal with him, and he says, okay, what are you going to do? Give me a pledge. And she pledged. He pledged to give her three things. What did he give her? The signet, a cord, and a staff. I'm sorry, what?
The goat?
No, for the goat. He had to have a pledge. She never got the goat. She didn't want the goat in the first place. That wasn't her method. It was her method of operation. Now, it doesn't make any difference how you think about the person. Whether you think they did right or they did wrong makes no difference. We're just reading what it says to find out a certain person that's very important in this story. All right?
I just got a question. I'm trying to find here that Judah's wife died.
Judah what?
Judah's wife did die?
Yes. Mm-hmm. She died early. So, what that verse was. It's verse 12.
Okay. Well, here's a question I have then. Judah's wife is dead, so he's not considered an adulterer to be going off to a harlot or finding another wife or whatever. But yet Tamar, she's had two husbands dead, but yet when she gets found to be pregnant, they accuse her of adultery. Her husband is equally dead to Judah's wife, but why is she accused of adultery and he is not?
It's called man justice, human justice here. We're not talking God's justice here. We're not saying what the eternal would do in this situation. We're saying what took place. Judas did not come out being a man of great stature, bravery. He actually comes out being, in a sense, a coward. From the beginning all the way until he finally repents of it at his old age. We're not there yet.
You said that this is not adultery, harlotry.
No, not in this case. It's not called adultery. The word, thou shalt not commit adultery, it's not the same word. Adultery has to do with a man and wife and someone departing and having sexual relations. This is for money. She did it for hire. And the same thing we do in our world. A harlot is someone who does something for money, sells her body for money. The same, I'm sorry, what? No, it's not that. Fornication can be involved, but we're talking harlotry. We're talking about someone who sells something for the use of the body in this particular case. When Israel is accused of committing adultery with Israel, she's selling herself for goods. All right, that's all the prophets talk about her being an adultery. We're seeing what's taking place at the very beginning of Genesis. What a harlot is. And so we see in the beginning, this is the definition of it. Now we're going to hit into the book of the prophets. And the prophet says that Israel committed harlotry, sold herself for profit. Not really. I don't think there's a prostitute on the face of this earth that really does it because she's in love with this world. No, she does it for money.
Sorry, this is quiet enough. It seems to me that God's heart. My Christian eyes see harlotry, adultery differently than the points God seems to focus on scripturally. Because there's a lot of trickery with women throughout the Old Testament regarding looking to be of what's her name? She laid with what's his name to trick him into thinking that he had relations with her. What was his name? No. Ruth. Ruth had the appearance of back in. It just seems that.
What?
Boaz.
Boaz.
Go ahead. Finish your question.
It seems that even in this case, God doesn't go after her. He goes after Judah.
Why?
And also in the Mosaic law, if a woman is accosted in that way, there's always a recompense. There has to be an exchange of value. And that always seems to be kind of the center point. If she is wrongfully taken advantage of, there she's to be wed and married to. I mean, there's a whole.
Correct.
It's always about
Correct.
An exchange.
So what does it tell you about the whole Tanakh? It's very male dominated.
Yeah.
People, men, you got to understand this thing. It is written for you. Why? Because look, if a man takes on a wife. He is not the head of the wife like he has got authority and dominion and power over. Now he has responsibility. It is his obligation to listen to the word of the living God to know exactly how to take care of this thing that God created for him. Not to use her or to abuse her or to take advantage of her. That is a combination of both bad and evil. You understand what I'm saying? So we have this thing with Tamar. Now, we could judge Tamar and say she's a horrible broad, but that's not the truth. The issue is, what did Judah do? What was Judah's responsibility? Why did Judah do this? Judah should never have done that in the first place. However, it's a man's world. And because men overpower women, because they think they are the head, the boss, the ruler, the dominant, guess what? Woe will be unto you when you come to the judgment. You understand what I'm saying? Yes. The Bible is very, very strong. Tanakh is very, very strong in support of women, regardless of her conduct.
I know this is throughout the story, God's plan is like trying to be breached, probably through Satan in this story. So it's like through Judah's lust, he kind of strayed away from God's plan, and God used Tamar right. to get him, you know, sort of.
Judah
promise.
Really was never in God's plan. I mean, he didn't want to be. If he'd been part of God's plan in the first place, or been wanted in God's plan, he would have listened to Joseph. He would have heard the dream and says, "Oh wow, we got to follow exactly what Joseph said." No, Judah didn't want anything to do with, and it's. Pretty evidence in that history. He didn't want anything to do with what God had to say. He would. Why? Is he different? Is he wicked? No, he's bad like everybody else that his brothers were. Just, God does not deal with every human being at the same time, the same place, and what do you say? What am I trying to say here? I mean, God, look at who God's dealing with and saying why. Now, right now, we're getting a book of Judah, about Judah rather, and we'll find out what happens to Judah at the end. We have to find out in the beginning how horrible was this man. What did he do wrong? He lied, he cheated, he underhanded, he didn't keep his promises. Guess what? How many of the prophets of old, the wise men of old, did everything according to Elohim? Did Abraham do everything according to Elohim? No. Did Isaac do anything to Elohim? No. Did Jacob do anything to Elohim? No. We're going to find out that Jacob, Joseph didn't do everything according to Elohim. We have all these things. We're seeing the actions that are written down there for us to understand something, not about what they did, but what God did. What action he took. Does God put his hand and lift his hand away from protection? Yes. Will God use, we'll get to the point here. Does God use his rod and staff on us? He uses his rod on us. If he doesn't use his rod on us, guess what? Yeah. We are bastards, biblically speaking. You need to. You have to request it. This is why the Psalms, we'll get there. Psalms says, thy rod and thy staff comfort me. When you spank me with the rod, when you punish me with the rod, I am what? Comforted. I can straighten myself out because what human being knows inside of themselves which direction to go? Nobody. They have to be taught and shown and taught and shown and taught and shown. Just because you have a little boy, a little girl, they finally get the rod from mommy and daddy, and they find they're now they're adults, they have no longer rods. You know they have rods coming, and the children learn this, that as they get older, the rod will come from their parents, and then from God.
Well, I was thinking that he might have lust because I know there's godly women among him, so, I mean, like Israelites, speaking of, and he chose to go into a Canaanite woman. That...
Well, there wasn't very many Israelites in those days.
Okay.
I mean, who was Judah going to marry? Okay? I mean, he had the only one daughter that Jacob had was Dinah. Okay, so he couldn't marry his sister. Now, he could have possibly married, quote, in a quote, one of Reuben's daughters, but didn't say that. All right? He married a Canaanite. By the way, when they took the city of Shechem, what did the brothers do? They took the women, which is Canaanite women, and the children. They didn't kill them. They just took them. What do you think they did with them? They married them. So basically, an awful lot of you think you're never, if you think you're an Israelite by birth, just go back far enough and you're also a Canaanite by birth. Especially if you're Jewish. No, I mean everybody else. But you understand what I'm saying, all right? What does Canaan mean? What does Canaan mean? Humbled one. The one that's been humbled. Have you ever been humbled? Well, if you haven't, then you probably will be soon. Anyway. Okay, now we have what's called the signet. Now what that is in Hebrew, it's a signet ring. He actually has a ring. Every how you sealed anything, any message, any letter you sent out, as you know, it was sealed with a ring. Right? Book of Revelation. Remember the seven seals? Each one's got a signet ring on it. That signet ring is not the signet ring of the Messiah. That signet ring is the signet ring of the Creator of heaven and earth, his Father. And so now he's the only one allowed to open it up. He's the only one allowed to break that seal to find out what it says. The next one it says, and the cord. Basically, what do you think that cord is? Okay. Technically, it says just a cord or a string. All right. Now, you got to think back just a little bit. What did the Apostle Paul tell you to do when you are to put on the whole armor of God? What was one of the phrases he used? Gird yourself. So it was a thing that he'd use to gird himself up so he can run. That he took off and gave to her. All right, or what more known as a, what's that word I want to use?
No, he women. Calls it to a belt or?
What women used. Girder, right.
Girder used to be
only for men.
A girdle?
A girdle. It was only for men. And later, women took it on.
I'll take your word for that.
But they, only if they had, not. We're not talking about having pants. We're talking about having that long robe. in order to run, and you had to tie it down. That tie that came through was called the girder.
It's more like a belt. It's
like a belt. Yeah, I know it's like a belt. Yes.
Yeah.
But in Old English, it was still called the same thing, but it was called a girder. It's a funny name. And the last one was your staff. That really is not the right word for it. That word is not staff. It's rod. It was his rod. Why would he have a rod for? He was a sheep herder, right? And what do you do with a rod? You poke the sheep to get them straightened out, make them go the right direction. That's why we have in Psalms, by the way, the word has been translated in King James for the word that's used here for tama. Tama is the Hebrew word for a rod. Basic means a branch. The root word is branch. And what it's used for 180 times plus is referring to the tribe. Each one of the tribes of Israel was called a rod. Why would they call a rod for? Think what's happening. What is God trying to accomplish here when he called the tribes of Israel rods? What were they supposed to do? I'm sorry, what? Leadership. And that means you have to do something with a rod. Correction. All right. So all the house of Israel, all the tribes of Israel, their function was to correct, to lead and guide the world. And since they fell short of it, guess what? You're without it. And I told a real story about the rod, your staff, they comfort me. Staff here is in Psalms, a different word. And in Exodus 21, verse 20, and if a man smites his servant or his maid with a rod, and he die under his hand, he shall surely be punished. So you just can't beat up your servant anytime you want. You're in trouble if you do. And here in Psalms 81, verse 22, this is God speaking. Then I will visit their transgressions with a rod and their mighty iniquities with stripes. So God uses his rod. What's his rod? Isaiah, chapter 11. Verse 4, but the wickedness shall he judge the poor, talking Messiah, and rebuke with equity the meek of the earth, and smite the earth with the rod of his mouth, and the breath of his lips, they shall slay the wicked, or he shall slay the wicked. So the rod, when God comes out and he starts talking to you, you know, pay attention to the words. Because that's what he uses to correct you. Have you ever been open up your word of God? Have you ever opened up anywhere and realized, oh, I was wrong. That's why I'm not blessed. And you stop it. He says, oh, you still lost. You still lost what you didn't do. But now you turn around and you say, I'm no longer going to do that. And by the way, it may take a coup, 3 or 4 or 5 years to straighten it out. But still, you got the correction. You still received the loss. So what? Now you walk in the right direction. Okay? That's what we talk about when we talk about the rod. So when we talk about Judah, when he sent his rod, he gave the rod, that was his job and function to do. Why would he give something like that up? The lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life. And he was deceptive. And of course, we know what went on. And of course, verse 23, I find very finished. Genesis 38, verse 22. I find very interesting that Judah said to his friend, let her keep them or take them for herself. Let her have them. Okay? Lest we be ashamed. Interesting word. So his friend was in cahoots with the deception. I find that very interesting that his friend, who means he's supposed to be what? One of the family that was of what? Judge, justice of the people, a judge of the people, the one that judged righteously, he was not doing his role correctly either. Everybody has a different concept. Verse 24, she shall bring her out and let her be burned. And I've heard all sorts of things about this. That, oh, she must have been a Levitical priesthood. No, because priesthood wasn't ordained at that time. Oh, she must have been a tribe of Levi. Well, it doesn't say that. No one knows, and you could stipulate everywhere you want, that she must have been a daughter of somebody important. Doesn't say that. Okay, so we have to kind of backtrack a little bit and don't assume something that's not written. So I'm going to clarify that one. Now, of course, he just wanted her to be burned alive. Now, he's not kill her, then burn her alive. Interesting, isn't it? And of course, guess what happened? She said to these who belong to, and guess what he said? She has been more righteous than I. Oh. He didn't say she was righteous. She's more right. She's more correct. She is, you know, guess who got ashamed? The one who didn't want to be anybody know what was going on. I mean, it's broadcast throughout all of Judah's brothers and anybody else that was associated with him. Everybody found out, oh, look what Judah did. Oh, look what happened here. Oh, my. You know, Judah was ashamed. Basically, that's a nutshell, because I did not give her Selah, my son. And now, let's go down to, she gave birth to two people. And remember the scarlet cord or scarlet ribbon? Yes.
Oh, I think it's interesting that, you know, that phrase, what comes around, goes around, or vice versa, something like that. The very words that she uses, well, do you recognize these things?
But it was his ring, you know, his signature.
Right,
yeah, right.
But that's what the brothers said to Jacob about Joseph's bloodied coat. You know, see if you recognize who this belongs to. So.
Yes. That's cool. I didn't think about that one. That's okay. Now, a lot of people make a deal over the scarlet cord that's wrapped around the first one. And his hand was pulled back. We'll get to that in a minute. And then, in his translation, it says, and his brother came out and out unexpectedly. Now, most Jews don't have that word in there. That's because it really was more unexpectedly than what it really is. What is the Hebrew word there used to be translated? Most of your translations says the word behold. And now we sing our song, Hine Mato, behold. Now in Hebrew, it doesn't word says, oh, behold, here comes her mother. It says, oh, behold, the mother's coming. That's what it says. Behold, how great it is for brothers to dwell together. It's an explanation. It's a powerful statement. So we were looking at this Hine. That's where the word comes from. Hine. Hine, guess what? He came out and she said, how do you break forth upon you? Therefore his name was Perez. It's Pa-Rez. 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 T-Z on the end of it. Not a Z. Pa-Rez. We'll get to these two names in a minute. But I'm going to concentrate primarily on the breach. The unexpected one. One that breaks forth unexpectedly. One that all of a sudden he's there. And guess who he's a descendant of? I mean, guess who we go through here? This is the generation of Perez. Perez begot Hezron. Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Amminadab. Amminadab begot Nahshon. Nahshon begot Shalom. Shalom begot Boaz. And Boaz begot Oved. And Oved begot Jesse or Yesse. And Yesse begot David. Oh, very important individual, right? All right. Now, what is the name of the other brother called? He just calls one that's the rising. But what did he do? What did he do? He withdrew his hand Oh, why did he withdraw his hand? Is it just what babies do? Or is this the act of the Creator saying, I'm going to move now, and I'm going to intervene now, and it's going to happen? Okay? Where's my notes here? I got it here somewhere. Oh. He that draws back. Shub or shuv. It means to turn back. To intrinsically, literally, and figuratively, withdraw. To retreat. And then try again. That's very funny. Now we have the Jewish people. There are two kinds of peoples that come from Judah. One is the one that does what? Comes forth quick and fast. And the other one does what? Withdraws. Have you ever noticed that's kind of a customary with most Jewish community? Some are out there and others withdraw. Kind of a funny thing when you look at the tribe of Judah and those two sons, and all of a sudden their nature is throughout their entire peoples. You have some of the Jews who will not fight, they're terrified and they withdraw, and the other ones who will fight until they're dead. Unexpectedly, they'd fight. But go back to the Messiah for a moment. What's the Messiah going to do? Now, he is of the line of whom? Let's get more specific. Peretz. The one that, behold, comes forth. Oh, guess what he's going to do? He's going to come as a what of the night? Catch the entire world. Behold, there is. Too late. All of a sudden. So the relation of that name relates to the Messiah, and that's why that name was used. Okay, so every time you think about he was the light of Judah, know which line he was from. He wasn't the one that was, in a sense, held back, because he was held back. He didn't do the functions as the King of Kings. Yet, what does it tell you about the Messiah when he is born? He didn't come out. Behold, he came out and a scarlet cord was present and he withdrew. You see the parallel? Do you understand that this is not just a function of Jewish people? It's a function that's telling us something about the Messiah and the two actions. We have the coming of the Messiah that comes like a what? Lamb. He's going to return as a what? Lion. That's why we have this thing, you know, month of March is what? Comes in like a lamb, goes out like a lion. It's the same thing. The word, that phrase that we have in month of March, it really starts with, it has to do in association with the Messiah. That's why they called him that way, if you didn't know that. Okay, it's 2:30. Hey, not too bad. Any questions? Hey, Mommy, what I'm telling you is not necessarily... Go ahead.
About the scarlet cord, as a Christian, we learned so many things about the scriptures show scarlet cord or scarlet thread throughout the whole...
right. So I want to relate to the one that has been held back.
I thought it had something to do with the blood of Christ, and it was showing all the way through Genesis, all the way through to the...
I'm not going to doubt that at all, but remember, that is a teaching which I don't have any backing up by Torah. I'm not saying it's not, quote, a good concept, because I do not know. From right now, to my mind, that's abstract, so I can't say, yes, that's what it means. You understand what I'm saying? Yes, that's been taught, and probably always be taught, and people always believe that. Yes.
What you were saying kind of goes along with what the sages were looking for, were the two messiahs, Messiah ben Joseph and Messiah ben David.
Yeah.
The lion and the lamb, yeah, the suffering and the...
Yeah, it's fascinating. Why son of Joseph? Who are they talking about?
I'm not sure.
We're talking about the book that Joseph we're reaching into now.
Okay.
All right. And that's that we had a picture of what Joseph was
Messiah.
And how he was treated. Yeah. And you know the story,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it
yeah.
leads him into something else. He became a high priest, and then he became Pharaoh.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Same pattern.
Yeah.
All right? It's identical on that whole pattern. Yes.
Totally unrecognizable to his own brother.
Totally unrecognizable because it's not supposed to be seen,
I
right?
I can't wait for next
Held
week.
Held back, withdrawn for a reason. Hope we have some understanding. I'm not saying what I'm saying is necessarily kosher because I don't know all the facts. I just want to bring in some really heavy thinking here so we have a picture. Because everything is in the Torah, and what's going on here with Judah and what's going on with all of Joseph has everything to do with the Messiah. Not about house of Israel, not about the tribe of Israel, but about the Messiah and how he is going to handle everything and his actions and his deeds. When we get into, when you start looking at and understand a little bit the actions that Jacob did, you see the actions of the Creator doing something. It's not the act of Joseph, but the act of the Creator doing something. We'll get there when we get there. All right?